Welcome to the deep dive. This is where we take the sources and questions you send us, things you're curious about, and really try to get to the heart of them.
Yeah, pull out the key insights.
Exactly. So today we're looking at an article one of you sent in. It's got a long title.
It does.
The Lie of the Zohar, Eiffel Part 6. Something about contradicting laws from the Shulchan Aruch, and specifically about the order of Talit and Tefillin.
Right. Talit being the prayer shawl with tzitzit, the fringes, and tefillin, the phylacteries.
Uh-huh. And the article basically asks, which comes first? Talit, then tefillin, or the other way around?
It's a fundamental question, and the article digs into the arguments, particularly questioning the standard practice based on the Shulchan Aruch.
And the Shulchan Aruch, just as a reminder, is a really, really central code of Jewish law. Many people rely on it daily.
Absolutely. So our mission today is to, you know, unpack the viewpoints in this article, understand the reasoning.
Okay, let's start with the standard ruling. What does the Shulchan Aruch actually say?
So the Shulchan Aruch in Orach Chaim, Laws of Tefillin, Section 25, Paragraph 1, it's pretty clear. It says you put on the talit, which sits at first, and then you put on tefillin.
Okay. Talit, then tefillin, Mary. Is there a reason given?
Yeah, the reason mentioned right there is Malin Bakodesh Velo Moradin. You ascend in holiness, you don't descend.
Ascending in holiness. So the idea is talit is maybe less holy, or tefillin is more. How does that work?
Well, the interpretation often given is that you move towards things of greater sanctity. Some understand talit as encompassing the body first, preparing for the more intense sanctity of tefillin on the head and arm.
Makes sense. Now, what about the next paragraph? It mentions people wearing a talit katan, that small fringed garment, all day.
Right. Paragraph 2 deals with that. It says if you're already wearing a talit katan at home, you put your tefillin on while wearing it. Then you go to synagogue and you put on the big talit, the talit gadol, over everything.
So even then, tefillin goes on when some kind of tzitzit is already present.
Exactly. The underlying principle seems consistent there.
Okay. Now, the article brings up the Beit Yosef. That's Rabbi Yosef Karo's huge commentary, the basis for the Shulchan Aruch itself. What does he say about why talit comes first?
So the Beit Yosef, commenting on this section, offers an initial reason. He suggests it's because the mitzvah of tzitzit is more frequent to deer.
More frequent? How so?
Because tzitzit applies every day, even on Shabbat and festivals, whereas a talit are generally not worn on Shabbat and festival.
Ah, right. So the more constant mitzvah gets priority in the morning sequence.
That's the idea presented there. Kadir vishyano tadir, tarikodim. The frequent thing comes before the infrequent thing.
Interesting. Okay, frequency. But then the article throws a wrench in the works, right? It brings up Rabbi Yonah of Gerondi.
It does. Rabbi Yonah, a major figure from the 13th century. The article points out that initially, in his book Sefer Ha'ira, he actually agreed, tzitzit, then tefillin.
Okay, so he was on board at first.
But, and this is the article's point, he apparently changed his mind later.
Changed his mind? Why?
According to the article, his later reasoning was, well, a person is already wearing clothes. The main point of tzitzit is fringes on a garment.
Uh-huh.
So, since you're clothed anyway, that condition is sort of met. Therefore, he argued, you should put on tefillin first. Make the blessing for that primary mitzvah before wrapping yourself in the additional talit gadol.
That's quite a different way of looking at it, focusing on the core obligation versus the act of putting on the specific talit gadol.
Precisely. Delaying the tefillin blessing seemed less logical to him in that later view, given you're already dressed.
Okay, so how did the Beit Yosef, Rabbi Karo, react to this later opinion of Rabbi Yonah?
Well, the article stresses that the Beit Yosef disagreed. He rejected Rabbi Yonah's revised view.
And why did he disagree? Did he counter Rabbi Yonah's logic about already being clothed?
This is where it gets really interesting and central to the article's critique. The Beit Yosef doesn't primarily argue based on frequency anymore or counter the already clothed point directly. Instead, he brings in the Zohar.
The Zohar, the foundational text of Kabbalah, Jewish mysticism.
Exactly. The Beit Yosef cites the Zohar as stating there's a significant, even terrible, prohibition against putting on tefillin before putting on tzitzit.
A prohibition, not just a preference, but a prohibition based on the Zohar.
Yes. The article also notes that another authority, the Agur, held this view, and the Beit Yosef explicitly agrees with the Zohar and the Agur on this point.
So the Beit Yosef's final ruling in the Shulchan Aruch seems heavily influenced, maybe decisively influenced, by this Zoharic statement.
That's certainly how the article presents it.
But the article we're discussing is, well, very critical of relying on the Zohar here. It uses the word lie.
Extremely critical. The core argument of the article is that this specific Zoharic statement is not authentic, not reliable, and shouldn't be the basis for halakha, for Jewish law.
Wow. Okay, does the article explain why the Zohar says this? What's the Zohar's reasoning for this prohibition?
It does. It quotes the Zohar via the Sulam commentary on Parashat Bamidbar. It talks about some pretty mystical concepts, like a lower tree, apparently connected to death, especially at night. And this idea that when you sleep, your soul is sort of entrusted to this entity.
Okay. Sounds deep. And how does that connect to Talit and Tefillin?
The Zohar, according to this interpretation, links it to the morning routine. First, you purify yourself after sleep. Then you take on the yoke, which is interpreted as tzitzit.
The yoke of heaven, maybe?
Perhaps. And then only after tzitzit do you bind the union, which is understood as tetit, symbolizing union with the divine.
So a specific mystical sequence, purification, yoke, tzitzit, then union, tefillin.
Exactly. A Kabbalistic rationale for the order.
And the article's reaction to this rationale?
Very negative. It calls this reasoning impurity, even bordering on idolatry. The author fundamentally rejects this mystical explanation as a valid basis for practice.
Strong words. So the critique isn't just about the Zohar's authenticity, but also the content of its reasoning here.
Yes, both. The article argues the Beit Yosef make a mistake by accepting this Zohoric teaching.
And the article points out a lack of, let's say, a clear non-Zohoric reason in the Beis Yosef's own analysis.
Precisely. Remember, the Shulchan Aruch just says ascending in holiness.
Right.
The article argues that the Beit Yosef doesn't really flesh out how that principle applies specifically to Talit before Tefillin beyond just stating it. The heavy lifting seems to be done by the Zohar citation.
And the article contests the application of ascending in holiness here anyway, doesn't it?
It does. It argues that principle usually applies within a category like you don't use a holy object for a less holy purpose, or you handle sacred items in a specific order.
Uh-huh.
It gives examples from Maimonides, the Rambam, about, say, tying tzitzit fringes, or even demoting someone in the Sanhedrin hierarchy. The argument is that it's about not degrading something sacred, not necessarily ordering two separate mitzvot like Talit and Tefillin.
So the claim is ascending in holiness might be a kind of justification applied after the decision was made based on the Zohar.
That's the implication, yes.
Yeah.
That the real driver was the Zohar's prohibition.
Okay. So the article critiques the standard ruling and its basis. Does it propose the alternative to fill in first based on positive arguments?
It does. It builds a case for prioritizing to fill in. Firstly, it claims the Rambam, Maimonides, never actually mandates putting tzitzit on before tefillin.
Interesting. Absence of evidence from the Rambam.
Right. But more significantly, it contrasts the nature of the two obligations.
How so?
The argument is, tefillin is a personal obligation on all Jewish men, full stop, every day, barring Shabbat and festivals.
Okay. A universal obligation for men.
Whereas tzitzit, the obligation is technically on the garment. You're only obligated if you wear a four-cornered garment. If you don't wear one, you don't have an active obligation at that moment.
I see the distinction. One is personal, the other is conditional on the clothing.
Exactly. So the article argues the mitzvah that is a direct, unconditional obligation, tefillin, should logically come first. The obligatory takes precedence over the conditional.
And it quotes the Rambam on tzitzit to back this up.
Yes. It references Rambam's Laws of Tzitzit, Chapter 3. It mentions how women and minors are exempt, how it's praiseworthy to wear one. But crucially, Rambam emphasizes the obligation falls on the person who has a suitable garment.
So the article interprets Rambam as supporting the idea that tzitzit obligation is garment dependent, reinforcing the argument to prioritize the person dependent obligation of tefillin.
That's the line of reasoning presented. Tefillin is the more fundamental, inherent obligation for the individual man.
Okay, it's a clear counterargument based on the nature of the commandments themselves.
Right, which leads directly to the article's conclusion.
Which is pretty unambiguous.
Very. It restates firmly that the Shulchan Aruch's ruling relies solely, in its view, on this lie of the Zohar.
And therefore?
Therefore, the article concludes, one should actually be careful to put on tefillin before wrapping in the Talit Gadol. It advocates reversing the standard practice.
Wow. And it adds a final thought about Rabbi Yosef Karo himself.
Yeah, a speculative point. The author believes that if Rabbi Karo had known the Zohar wasn't, you know, actually from the time of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, which is a debated point historically, he might have rejected this Zoharic teaching and ruled differently.
Kind of suggesting the ruling is based on a potentially flawed historical premise about the Zohar's authority.
That seems to be the underlying suggestion, yes.
Okay, so let's just summarize this complex picture. We started with the standard ruling. Talit first, then Tefillin, based on the Shulchan Aruch citing ascending in holiness.
Right, with the Beit Yosef initially suggesting frequency, but ultimately leaning heavily on a Zoharic prohibition against the reverse order.
Then this article comes in, challenging that Zoharic basis, calling it unreliable, questioning its mystical reasoning, and arguing the ascending in holiness principle might be misapplied here.
Exactly. And it presents the counterargument. Rabbi Yonah's later view, the claim that Rambam doesn't mandate Talit first, and the logical argument that the unconditional personal obligation of Tefillin should precede the garment conditional obligation of tzitzit.
It really highlights, doesn't it, the tension and interplay between different kinds of sources in Jewish law, codified law, commentary, mystical texts, earlier authorities, logical reasoning.
Absolutely. It shows that halakha isn't monolithic. There are different strands, different ways of weighing sources, and interpretations can be debated even on points of daily practice.
And this deep dive really just scratches the surface, showing how examining the why behind a practice can open up a whole world of historical and legal discussion.
It certainly does. It's a great example of how dynamic halakhic discourse can be.
So a final thought maybe for you listening. When faced with different interpretations or priorities within a tradition like the Zohar's mystical view versus a logic based on the nature of obligation, how does one navigate that? What factors determine which reasoning holds more weight for an individual or a community?
How do you weigh tradition, mystical insight, and rational analysis when they seem to point in different directions? That's the perennial question.
Definitely something to think about. Thanks for exploring this with us on the Deep Dive.